Coming up on New York Now, a conversation with the incoming Senate Majority Leader, Andrea Stewart-Cousins.
People decided that they need to be involved, and they do. And so they've sent a resounding message. They want Democrats, as they voted for before, they want Democrats to lead, and they need our leadership, and we are certainly pleased and looking forward to stepping up.
It's next on New York Now, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program. This is New York Now.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan.
I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union.
And I'm Karen DeWitt from New York State Public Radio.
Well, we're starting this week's show at the Reporters Roundtable to talk about some of the week's news in this post-election week. The biggest news, and certainly the biggest item in terms of price tag, is the news that the state and city will expend $1.7 billion in order to lure Amazon's second new headquarters to Queens.
That's right. They had a nationwide search, and surprise, surprise, they picked New York City because it's cool and hip and a nice place to be, and Washington, D.C., where presumably they'd be closer to be able to lobby lawmakers. At least that's what the cynics are saying, that they never plan to go to any of these other cities in the Midwest or struggling areas that really were banking their hopes on this.
Not far from the Washington Post, of course.
Exactly. Yeah, Northern Virginia is going to get this, is going to get the second Amazon facility. There was, however, pushback that this is the richest, I believe, in state history in terms of grants and tax subsidies. Governor Cuomo and Mayor Bill de Blasio, in a very rare for them moment of kumbaya, came together to say, no, this is going to be worth it. This is going to generate something in the vicinity of at least 25,000 jobs, perhaps as many as 40,000.
But people are raising questions. They're a wealthy company, and why did they get all of that public money? Google's coming to Lower Manhattan. Apple is there. They didn't get any public money. And the district that's represented by the deputy Senate leader, soon to be deputy Senate Majority Leader Mike Gianaris, and he is not happy with this. He's saying the money should be used for subways or schools. And why was this a secret deal that the lawmakers were completely kept out of?
Just a couple of people who are objecting to the deal. I think it's fair to say it's a very diverse ideological list. You mentioned Mike Gianaris, who, of course, is a Senate Democrat. Kirsten Gillibrand said there should have been more community involvement. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and the Empire Center, you can't get opposed to each other on the political spectrum than that. And John Flanagan, the outgoing Senate Majority Leader, who issued a scathing statement that said after 8 years, Governor Cuomo has no vision for economic development. Now, I think it would be fair to point out that the Senate Republicans have essentially gone along with just about every economic development program that Governor Cuomo has put
forward. They did, but now that they're on the outs with him, I guess they're free to say it. I guess, you know, the so-called corporate welfare is not as popular as it was. It just seems like it just rubbed everybody the wrong way. And I don't think Governor Cuomo or Mayor de Blasio expected that. They thought this would be a great announcement. Everyone would be happy. And it really had a lot of unintended political consequences.
That's what I was just going to ask. I mean, do you think in an interview on Thursday, a radio interview, Governor Cuomo said he wasn't surprised by the pushback, but I'm wondering if he's really being truthful, because you just read the list, you know, the rising star from the New York congressional delegation, U.S. Senator, maybe presidential contender. And isn't it ironic that the one issue, not that there's just one, but the issue that brings Cuomo and de Blasio together is one that is very unpopular with other Democrats.
Well, wasn't that part of the deal that they had to get along? That was part of Amazon's criteria, I guess, that they had to stop fighting and put this together.
So. We'll see how long that lasts.
Let
no man set apart what Amazon might be able to hold together. There seems to be a lot of focus on one element, and that is the approval of a helipad for the Amazon facility in a city that has a beleaguered public transit system, to put it lightly.
That's right. And I think a ban on having so many of those helicopters because of big accidents that happened back in the 1970s. So this would be changing the rules of where you can have these helicopters take off and get off. And I guess it says something about the public transportation that Amazon top officials feel like they need a helicopter just to get into their office back and forth from their home.
We talk about the optics.
Are not good.
Jeez, that's really bad.
Well, hold that thought on optics, because that announcement was made 1 week after Election Day, the exact same day we had the first long-delayed meeting of a four-member commission that is considering whether state lawmakers and top agency leaders should get pay bumps.
That's right. It's been 20 years since they've got a pay raise, and it seems like they're probably going to get one this time, because they designed it so if this commission says they deserve a pay raise, the lawmakers don't actually have to vote on it. It just automatically becomes law. They would have to vote to rescind the pay raise, which I don't think they'll do. So it kind of sounds like this is probably going to happen this time, and maybe some people will cut them slack. It's been 20 years. Mm-hmm. You know, unfortunately, so many of them were getting indicted, going to jail, including the two former legislative leaders, that it was politically unpopular to raise their pay. But really, when they did it 20 years ago, they should have tagged it to the rate of inflation so that they wouldn't have to revisit this and make this a giant political football.
The New York Public Interest Research Group came out with some interesting statistics this week, NYPIRG, that said the governor is the third highest paid governor in the country, and I believe the New York State Legislature, Karen, you can check me on this, but is the third highest
paid. That's right, after California and Pennsylvania. So still, even without the raises, they're still making a lot of money. So that's an interesting perspective to see.
We should note this panel is made up of Tom DiNapoli, of course, the sitting controller, Carl McCall, Bill Thompson, Scott Stringer. So it's an all-controller affair. It's also an all-Democratic panel as well.
I don't know how that came about, because I have to confess I didn't look up the origins of this, why there aren't any Republicans on it.
It was, of course, passed in the budget negotiation or the budget deal this year.
Earlier this year.
I think it was, 2 years ago that the last pay commission essentially blew up. Largely due to Governor Cuomo's demands for reforms along with any pay raise.
Yeah, he wanted ethics reforms, and he wanted them to ban outside income, and the lawmakers didn't want to do it, and the whole thing just fell apart, which led to some very bad feelings. So that's why I think that the governor doesn't seem like he's going to meddle with it in that way this time. And it'll probably happen, and it'll happen around the holidays, and it'll be forgotten. And
they won't get December 10th
there
is the deadline.
They won't get the kind of blowback that the Amazon deal's getting on this, probably.
We should mention Kirsten Gillibrand on October 25th in her lone half-hour debate with her Republican opponent, Cheryl Farley.
In the middle of, a random Wednesday or Tuesday or something.
But the one big piece of news out of that debate was Gillibrand saying, if reelected, which of course she was commandingly, she would serve her full six-year term, which would take us through 2024.
That's right.
2 days after Election Day, she went on Stephen Colbert's CBS talk show and said that she would give a long, hard thought to the idea of running for the White House in 2020. How do you square those two statements?
I'm just not surprised she's going to finesse it some way. It seems like you can't run for re-election anymore and say, I'm only going to stay 2 years and then I'm going to run for president. You have to essentially, lie? I don't know if I want to use that strong word. Tell a falsehood?
She certainly could have finessed it better, Casey likes to say. But I think if there's one issue that people would be like, all right, this would probably be it. Okay, you're going to lie about running for president. All right, whatever.
Yeah. She can say, things change. The people want me. I need to do this. I feel very strongly about it. So it'll be interesting to see where that takes her.
All right, time now for this week's New York Now poll question. Are you happy Amazon chose New York City as one of their headquarters? Let us know at nynow.org. Last week we asked if you were satisfied with the Election Day results in the state, and a mixed bag here, a lot of happy and unhappy people. Starting off with Deborah in suburban Albany, she was pleased, saying, very glad Antonio Delgado won in the 19th Congressional District. Looking forward to his work to preserve health care reform.
Lewis in Western New York, watching on WNED, told us that it was great to see younger generations actively taking part.
And finally, Daniel in Rochester said he was sorry the governor was reelected.
Thank you to all those who participated. To vote this week, just head to nynow.org, where you will find all of our past programs and links to us on social media, including Twitter, where our handle is at nynow_PDS.
You'll also find a link to my paper's Capital Confidential blog as well, also available at timesunion.com. All right, we now turn our attention to Karen's interview with incoming Senate Majority Leader, who's been waiting years for somebody to use that phrase. Andrea Stewart-Cousins.
That's right, and she's going to make history come January. She hasn't officially been elected the leader of the Democratic Conference, but she fully expects to. She'll be the first woman majority leader and the first African-American majority leader. And you know, she's going to have her plate full with all of the things that are going to be going on, as you'll see in the interview.
Democratic Senate Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins, soon to be Majority Leader. Thanks for coming back on the show.
It's good to be here.
So I guess we can safely say that there isn't going to be any more three men in a room style of government, right?
I believe we can safely say this. I said again, my colleagues have not elected me leader as yet, but I am hoping that will happen. Yeah. And then, yes, we will put an end to three men in a room. I guess there'll be three people in the room.
Yeah, that's right. I know in the past that you didn't like being left out of those meetings, and we should explain it's the government style in Albany where it's the two majority party leaders and the governor.
That's right.
Who get in the room and make a lot of the big decisions. Would you consider opening that up to other members? Or not having such a kind of closed way of, you know, making decisions now that you have some influence in that?
I haven't been in the room, so...
Get in the room first.
I'd like to get in the room, and I always have to remind people, it's not my room. You know, it is actually the governor's room, and he convenes these meetings.
That's right.
And so it's we'll now be in the room where it happens. And the thing that I do want to say, obviously, is that... my priority, my conference's priority, is to come out with the best results for the people of New York. So I'm looking forward to being part of that.
So you now have 39 members. What is the final count as of today that we're talking?
Well, it's 39, mm-hmm. And then, of course, if we count Simca, who is mm-hmm. a registered Democrat, there will be 40
Senator Simca
Democrats
Felder, who's met with the Republicans for the last...
That's right.
Are you counting Senator Felder?
I am counting 40 Democrats mm-hmm. in the Senate chamber, yes.
Has he said that... Have you talked to him? Has he said
He's reached out to me. We've had a conversation. He does want to meet, and so we will meet.
Yeah, you assume he would probably go with you.
I do assume that, yes.
So what do you attribute this kind of big sweep to? Was the election all about really President Trump and resistance to his policies that helped the Democrats so much this year?
I think certainly that was a very, very large part of it. When people woke up after the presidential election in 2016 and realized that, and as I said, I always know that whether you were a Republican or a Democrat, you did not expect this outcome. And having come to the conclusion that this would be a four-year outcome, mm-hmm. people started looking at other levels of government and took a look at their state legislature. And I think certainly many people were surprised that in a quote-unquote blue state, the state Senate was still not blue. So the attention turned towards what were some of the reasons for that, what are some of the issues that we're unable to really move forward. And the collective energy of people all over, obviously, and certainly a very, very concentrated energy here in New York, created engagement of voters that we've not seen in so many years. We've always lamented the fact, frankly, that New York is number 46 out of 50 mm-hmm. states in terms of voter turnout and so on and so forth. And people decided that they need to be involved, and they do. And so they've sent a resounding message. They want Democrats, as they voted for before, they want Democrats to lead, and they need our leadership, and we are certainly pleased and looking forward to stepping up.
So Governor Cuomo helped you more than he has in the past. He contributed $5 million to state Senate campaigns as well as congressional campaigns. Wondering, do you owe him anything now for that help?
No, I mean, I owe him what I would owe any partner in government, which is to be able to work collaboratively in order to benefit the people that we serve. I think the governor's response to what's happening on the federal level is appropriate. He realized that the Republican majority, frankly, seemed unwilling and unable to stand up on behalf of New Yorkers when you see something like this tax bill that was absolutely aimed at New York and other states that were quote unquote blue.
That's right, the inability to deduct the state and local taxes anymore from the federal taxes,
Yes, and our Republican colleagues on the other side of the aisle absolutely said nothing. And I think the signal was loud and clear. We need to stand up for New Yorkers, and certainly if you can't do that, you need to get out of the way.
I want to talk about some of the priority items. Are you intending to send a message in January? What are some of the first things that we might see acted upon in the first month?
You know, I've always been reluctant to say this. We know that the first month is going to be extraordinary just because of the new leadership there. One of the first things I think of, though, because we are just off of our last voting cycle, is how difficult it has been for New Yorkers to vote.
Yeah.
We don't have early voting.
Yeah, one of the last states to not have it.
Exactly. We don't have automatic registration. We don't have so many things that we could have to make voting easier. So I believe those kinds of reforms would be among the very, very first. You know, we've been trying so hard to just do basic things. We want to expand the background check when it comes to getting guns. Mm-hmm. You know, unlike the nation, we actually do have a 3-day waiting period so that people can check to make sure that the person who's, you know, requesting the gun should have it. And we find that 3 days, frankly, is the time frame it takes if there's no questions. Yeah. There are questions if there are times, however, there are questions and they're not answered in 3 days. So we've been trying to explain. So we have some very basic things that we have been trying to get done, extreme risks protection order. I mean, things that we're trying to get done. So again, I'm not thinking, I know you're
I know, I'm eager to pin you down.
I know, and it's not gonna be easy to pin me down because there are so many people who want so much, and I need to
manage from them every day.
I'm trying to manage expectations. What I say is that I like to underpromise and overdeliver.
One more item, the Reproductive Health Act, codifying Roe v. Wade into law. There's a lot of pressure on you to do that. That bill's been languishing for years. Is that something you see happening?
I do certainly see that happening. Again, you know, I always remind people that New York's abortion laws predated Roe v. Wade.
Yeah.
In 1970.
Yeah, and I guess some people would think, well, why do you need to make any changes?
Well, they used to say that all the time. And first of all, they said, oh, no, nothing will ever happen on the federal level. And so you don't even have to touch it. And as we see, the reproductive health rights of women and rights of so many other people are being constantly attacked in this environment. So that no longer is the case. So we want to make sure that our standards at least meet the current federal standards, which again, you know, is saying things like, it's only if the life of the mother, and on the national level, it's the health or the life of the mother.
That's right. Current New York state law, if you have a late-term abortion, it could be only to protect the life of the mother,
right.
But not the health.
Not the health. And it's also, by the way, in the criminal codes.
Yeah.
And so there are updates that we need to do in order to even match the federal standards. And I will also say that when New York did pass these laws in 1970, they did it with the help of 12 Republicans who joined with the majority of Democrats to pass this legislation. And as you can see, over the years, we were not able to get even one Republican who will codify a 1973 law as it relates to women's reproductive rights. So we're going to change that.
Well, as you mentioned, you have a pretty diverse conference now. You have members from Long Island, the Hudson Valley, Westchester, but some of them might not be as progressive as some of the senators that were elected in the primary. So how are you going to balance all of that?
By balancing it. You know, I mean, it's a reality. We always understood that our growth is going to be out on the island or upstate. That's just a fact. We were obviously able to get a seat that was held by a Republican in New York with Senator-elect Andrew Gonardis.
Yeah, but Marty Golden.
So, I mean, but reality is that we're going to be growing outside of New York City. And people understand that it is important that we respect, that we look at New York as a whole, and that we have to care about what's happening in other regions of the state, because we are stronger when we are finding solutions that really positively impact, you know, as many people as we possibly can. So I think people understand that, and well, I think, again, they're eager to learn.
So I did want to ask you about one item that's in the news this week, and that's Amazon getting their headquarters in Queens. Your number two Senate Democratic Deputy Leader Mike Gianaris, who's from that district, has raised questions about why the state needed to give so much money to a wealthy company. So I'm wondering, where do you stand on that?
Well, you know, again, I am certainly interested in the job growth. I am certainly interested in the economics of, you know, bringing a company like Amazon here. And it's
50,000 jobs they're promising.
Well, I think the number keeps going up.
Well,
I think we started around 25, and then I've heard whatever. But again, I mean, I think that's to the point. More and more details are kind of trickling out, and so now there's all kinds of things out there. But, you know, I certainly find it hard to ignore the concerns that are being raised. I mean, anytime you have taxpayer money, you want to make sure that it is going, you know, for good use. And you also, because there will be impacts to this community, you need to make sure that the community is involved and any concerns are at least addressed. Transparency obviously was not there.
Yeah.
And so we're at this point now where we, you know, instead of, you know, celebrating something that on its face sounds like a good arrangement, you know, has more questions than have been answered.
Can the legislature review it? I mean, would you have the power to come in January and take a look at the deal, or is it too late?
Well, I mean, they've inked the deal. The deal has been signed. So, you know, obviously we can take a look at it. We've got to see what the details of the deal are. And again, as I said, we're still sort of hearing about it and reading about it. And now it's you know, become something that I think everybody has to really, you know, take a look at. And hopefully, you know, again, I'm hoping that even Amazon in this conversation will really be a very, very, very good neighbor and heed some of the concerns as well.
But in the future, do you think it should be done differently?
I do. I always do. This is taxpayer money. And to the extent that, again, you can at least be assured that, you know, if there's a negotiation, especially something that is this impactful, that you know, there is a range of stakeholders, you know, at the table are involved, you know, it I think, you know, leads to a better outcome. But again, we will see what happens, but I know that there are people who are really, really, you know, excited of the prospects, but on the same hand, there are very, very many people who are concerned.
And finally, and I think you probably expected this question to be coming at some time, the last time the Democrats ran the Senate, 2009, 2010, you were there, but you didn't have a leadership post, it was pretty chaotic and some would say disastrous. I mean, we had the Senate coup where you had factions of 31 members each, you know, holding alternative, you know, sessions in the chamber and, you know, a lot of corruption, a lot of the former leaders are in jail now. So how, you know, and people still look back at that and are a little worried, you know, can the Democrats run the Senate?
So, well, the Democrats, first of all, can certainly run the Senate. We are a whole new conference for the most part. I mean, obviously many of us are still there, but the conference is a conference that I believe not only has grown, but, you know, we've been through a lot. Those of us who are here and certainly the people who are coming in, we've all been through a lot to have our positions of leadership. and we've earned our positions of leadership, and we don't take that for granted. When you mentioned the coup, I have to tell you that obviously the coup was engineered by Republicans. It wasn't engineered by Democrats. And it's because the Republicans had held the chamber for the better part, you know, mostly 100 years, and they didn't want to relinquish the power. But we're at a point now where, again, the voters have very solidly asked for Democrats to be in charge of the Senate by sending 40 Democrats to the chamber. Everyone there understands our very important responsibility to be good stewards of the public trust, and we don't intend to break that trust in any way, shape, or form.
Well, we look forward to watching it all unfold in January. Thanks very much for doing the interview.
Thank you so much.
All right, Karen, great interview. Andrea Stewart-Cousins, stylish, as long as I have known her, known especially for her neckwear.
That's right. In fact, her scarves have their own Twitter feed, and I think that's a real tribute to her.
And it is?
It's at SC Scarves.
All right, that's a good follow. That's all the time we have this week for Karen DeWitt. I'm Casey Seiler of the Times Union.
And I'm Matt Ryan. Thanks for watching. We leave you today with footage of the Governor Mario Cuomo Bridge and the Hudson River.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation.